Welcome to another edition of the Exponential Podcast. I'm Todd Wilson, Director of Exponential. We're thrilled you're taking advantage of this free resource that was recorded at the Exponential Conference. It's part of a library of hundreds of hours of free training. In our mission to equip church planting leaders, we seek to distribute as many free resources as possible. Visit exponential.org to learn more and to check out the programming for the upcoming Exponential Conference.
So we're part of Regenerate Network, and if you're wondering what Regenerate Network is, we are the best Asian American multi-ethnic church planting network in the country. The only reason we're the best, we're the only. So there's no other ones that kind of focus on the whole Asian American multi-ethnic topic. DJ and I started this a few years back here at Exponential, and the reason we started it was we felt like, at least in terms of resourcing, how can we better equip the next generation of multi-ethnic leaders, Asian American leaders? I planted in 1996 my very first multi-ethnic church out in Washington, D.C., and the first person that I hired was a DJ. So I'm Korean by heritage, and DJ is Chinese. And then our third pastor was a white Canadian from New Brunswick, Canada, Scott Barfoot. And so us three kind of teamed up and said, what would a church for the next generation look like? And so we planted Ambassador Bible Church in 1996. And that church is still growing and thriving. It's 300-400 people in the heart of DC. And then in 2000, I came back to California and I planted another church called Ambassador Church. It's the same name. And we planted in 2003. Mm-hmm. And so our church is here in North Orange County in the city of Brea. And we are running about 400 or 500 in our attendance, but our vision is more than just growing in numbers. We want to grow the kingdom. So out of our church, we've planted maybe 7-8 churches that we help resource, support. Wilson is one of the most recent church plant. So I kind of dragged him up here and I say, Wilson, say something positive, okay? About us. Say something positive about our ministry. So Wilson is one of our Regenerate church plant. So Regenerate really is a couple of things we do. There are three major objectives. We are a church planting, resourcing, equipping, training. We meet once a month for church planters that want to plant. We also do church consulting. We go to churches to help. If you can't come to us, we will go to you. So we've been helping existing ethnic churches, Korean, Chinese, Vietnamese, Filipino, and just kind of developing a vision of how can we help you become a church planting church. But our real focus, in addition to church planting, is leadership development. And our passion is to raise the next generation of leaders. And the exciting thing in America is that there's a whole bunch of young Asian American leaders rising up. And not that we just want to focus on Asian American people, we really want to focus on Asian American leaders so that they can equip, whether they're in an Asian American context or non-Asian context, that they will have the resources to be able to fulfill the mission that God has called them. So that's kind of the overview of what we're about. Everything that we talk about is going to be on our website. So you can download all our slides if you like, or you can just, you know. So part of it is today we're going to talk about East Meets West, Asian American church planting. I'm going to show you some principles of East Meets West, some things to be aware of. Some of the stuff is new, some of these are things that we've already done before. But so Dee is my associate. So we're going to just go quickly around. Tell me your name and your context. Why are you in this, and what do you hope to learn? Okay, so, and then we'll pray. So, DJ?
DJ Chuang, I'm...
You know, what's interesting, Karen, is Hawaii is one of the unique places in the...
Yeah,
in
the whole state is multicultural.
Yeah, multicultural,
you know?
Multi-Asian.
Yeah.
A lot
so
of...
We don't feel like,
yeah.
Well, you know...
But what surprises me, yeah, what surprises me is that the English ministry is still seen as like a young adult youth ministry when you're third generation.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, Joe and I are good friends.
Oh, that's so funny.
We went to seminary together.
Well,
yeah.
Isn't that funny? So here's a lot of neat connections. Well, I'm so glad that we can share with you. You know, one of the things that we want to do, there's going to be three, four phases quickly. I'm going to share with, DJ's going to share with you some statistics on some of the issues that's happening in the Asian American community. I'm just going to share with you a little bit of kind of maybe an apologetic. And then at the end, we want to use a lot of this as Q&A. And then I'm going to have Wilson share his story at the beginning as well, because I think it's important for us to kind of, as we wrestle through this whole topic of Asian American, one of the fun things that I'll show you that is just to, here's the, is the challenge of the West and East in terms of, and this is just kind of some observations. It's important to understand, as coming from an Asian perspective, that there's already a sort of an inbred understanding of how we understand culture. And it's important because if we're going to do a multi-ethnic type of ministry, we're going to have to understand sort of the difference between the East and West. One of the great things about even being in the Philippines and traveling around the world, in 2 weeks I'll be in Korea and I'll be also in Singapore teaching. There's a common theme in the East, there's a common theme in the West. And part of that has to do with sort of the history of those nations. Somebody said this, you can tell by the staple of food whether you're East or West. What's the staple of food in the West?
Bread.
What's the staple of food in the East?
Rice.
That's how you can make a distinction between rice and bread. Because, you know, if you think about Western Europe, it's really bread. Yeah. If you think about the East, it's it doesn't matter what culture, language you are, the staple is the same, right? Yeah. But there are some other things, factors regarding East and West. And I think part of what we want to see is that in the West, it's an individualistic culture. Meaning that the focus of the West, and this is where, and I'll give this. The reason it's such a challenge for us as second generation is because I always say the second generation, instead of taking the best of both cultures, they take the worst. So they become very individualistic as well as kind of mixed in and collaborative. But West tends to be very individualistic. The West, if you were to ask somebody, what's your focus, it's really about themselves in terms of individual, unique. So again, that's a good and a bad thing. But in the West, there's a focus on sort of individuality. Where in the Eastern culture, the individual is always a subservient to the greater collective good. And so in any Eastern society, one of the things you say is I'm part of something. And again, if there's a dominant metaphor in the East, it's the family. And everything is driven by the family unit, family structure. Because again, you're not the most important part of the family. You're part of the family. It's the family that's most important. And how we function and do ministry, oftentimes in an ethnic context, part of the struggle comes from the sort of the challenge of the individualist and collaborative. And there's some differences between the West brain and the East brain. Now this is a fun little chart just to look at. And when they actually did studies on neuroscience to reflect the different, that Americans showed more activity in the regions that recognize objects, where Asians showed more activity in the area that process figure, ground, relations, holistic context. The way we think about things are very different as well, in terms of East and West. And I'll show you kind of some images of it. This is kind of a fun thing. And so you can download this on our website later on if you like. For example, in the individualistic Western culture, how big is the individual? That big, right? The West is all about how one person can make a big difference. Well, in the Eastern culture, how big is the person? Really insignificant. In the Eastern mindset, it's not about one person making a difference. It's a collective thing. Again, that affects the way we do ministry. One of the things that's important, if you were to ask the question, and this is an interesting question to ask in a multi-ethnic context, what is the family? Okay? Because the family is defined very differently. In the West, the family is a very small unit. It's oftentimes a mother, father, maybe the child, but often now in the Western culture, the mother and father are just maybe even they have another mother and father. It just becomes very different. And the meaning of the family in the Eastern culture is really the dominant social unit. It is not just your family, but it's the extended family that you're a part of. So when you look at the East and West, you see that even lifestyle is you do whatever you want to do in the West. It's sort of like, hey, whatever you feel like doing, you do. In the East, it's not what you want to do. It's what do we want to do. So there's a collectiveness. Now, tell me, how do the relationships in the West function?
That's a broad question.
It is a pretty broad. I'll give you an image, okay? It's connected. I'm connected to you. You're connected to somebody else. It's like, this is the Eastern relationship. It's really pretty much sort of enmeshed. And there's a lot of different connections. So relationship-wise, the East is very different. For example, the Western culture emphasizes independence, where in the Eastern culture, there is a greater sense of interdependence. Now, that's good and bad. There's some, again, it's not a bad or a good thing. It's just the reality of how we understand culture. For example, independence, early on in the West, we're told, and this is why the challenge for the second generation is, because the second generation, we take the, instead of the best of the both, sometimes we take the worst. But it's like, you know, you develop early independence, like you express yourself, you're responsible for self. In the Eastern culture, you never express yourself. Because expressing yourself, that's where your hand gets hit. You can't be different. You got to sort of have conformity. You know, it's be responsible for others. Personal goals secondary to the goals of the group. And as a result, the tension between the East and West become amplified as we think about how we do ministry. Now, how is the child taken care of in the East and West? Well, in individualistic culture, this is kind of how the child is taken care of. So it's kind of one of the... In the Eastern culture, it's sort of kind of collectively is sort of the way in which the family runs. What does the life of a senior look like in the West? Well, senior is walking his dog because now they're retired. In the East, once you become a grandparent, your job is to be a babysitter.
Yeah.
Again, that's part of Eastern mindset, right? Culture. Another just a difference between the individual at West and East is lower power distance. In the Western culture, power, a person must earn respect. The teachers are the ones who facilitate learning. Persons direct themselves. So there's much more of a self-direction in a Western culture. In the Eastern culture, parents teach children to obey. Children respect parents and those in authority. Teachers take the initiative in the class. Teachers are the ones who transfer wisdom. So the role of a student in the East is to learn in that question. In the role of the West is again, speak up. And so part of the challenge of working in a multicultural background is that we're dealing with both. And you have to understand both in those contexts. Another chart is, you know, in the individualistic culture, everything is horizontal. Everybody's somewhat equal. Collaborative, there's one person who's sort of, you know, it's a much more of a hierarchy. So as we look at the difference in culture, that's sort of some of the challenges that we face. Now, one of the things that we want to do, you have to go early, right? So I'm going to have DJ share a little bit of some stats as well, but I want to have Wilson share his story. And maybe just tell us, and you come up here, Wilson, tell us the story of how you planted growing up in a Chinese church, some of the challenges that went through, and some of the challenges that you're going through as you're planting a church. And then we're going to have DJ share a little bit about some of the trends that's happening in the Asian American culture.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Pastor Wei, for this opportunity. I grew up in a Chinese church with a senior pastor who... I had a great relationship with for most of my life, and then at the end we kind of parted ways because I found a lot of that conflict. And then Pastor Ray picked me up from the gutter as I was taking his class at Talbot, and then his leadership style was very American, and it was hard for me to adjust, actually, because even though I didn't like the style, it was hard for me to go and do and understand Ray from a totally different perspective, even though we jived a lot better. And then I think now I planted in 2014, took my first steps in January, and our anniversary from the grand opening is actually October 12th, so it's just a week away. And God's really blessed us as a church. I've been able to see now, especially as our church is becoming more diverse, we're about 35% to 40% non-Asian, mostly Caucasian. I've been able to see, because they are present with us, a lot of how I've brought kind of the East and West together in my leadership style, and also some of the ways that millennials, Caucasian or majority culture millennials, desire some of that Eastern or collective mentality. I actually think that our society is moving that way as a whole. And finding that there's a lot of people who celebrate, even though they wouldn't say, oh, this is like an Asian take on community, they actually are drawn to it without that being spoken. And so let me give you some examples. When we first started the church, one of our emphasis, as every and most churches, there's this strong emphasis for outreach. But it's even more prominent when you're starting a church. You either outreach well or you die, right? If you're a 300-400 person church, outreach becomes optional. Being missional becomes optional. You could kind of continue to float forever financially in terms of size and volunteers. But when you're 30 people, if you don't outreach well, you're pretty much going to drown. And so one of the ways that I saw us do outreach effectively is we did it in communities. And so me and my wife, when we went to Fullerton, we started with Epic. We launched that with about 3 people. It grew to 60. And then we went to apartment complex right next to the campus. And we do these events for 50 to 100 people 3 times a month. And we also visit people who move in and out of the complex. So I felt like God was calling us to be missionaries to these mission fields before he had called us to plant a church. So we were in both of these mission fields, building mission teams for about 2 or 3 years before we planted. But when we did plant, our whole philosophy was to do missional living in community as a team, right? So a lot of Western churches, they will say, oh, go to your workplaces, go to your families, go to your social circles and be the missionary. And that's a very individualistic mentality. I'm going by myself to my mission field. But for us, all of our small groups, we see them as mission teams, and they have a specific area in which they're reaching, right? So we have 6 freshmen small groups that meet in dormitories, and they know that alongside of scripture and prayer and accountability, that they're a functional mission team for that specific dormitory. And that by the end of the year, we're hoping that the 200 students would all have an opportunity to hear about Jesus. And they plan strategically to reach that specific area. They would ask mission team questions as if they were overseas. And then we did that as well in our apartment complex. We have 2 small groups once a month that we pray over our apartment complex, we prayer walk it, and then they join us for the event. And they in their community, they bring other people into the community that already exists. Does that make sense? So one big way that I see our culture influencing our church is by the way we do outreach. We see it as a team, as a community, versus as individuals going out. I think another way that I see our Eastern culture influencing our community is that there's this great sense of doing life together. So a lot of my friends who grew up white and went to white churches, especially if it's a larger church, it's like a time block on their schedule, right? It's like church is from 9 to 10:30, and then we come in as a family, we leave as a family, we don't really talk to each other or talk to the rest of the community. And especially if you're in a mega church, it can kind of be like a customize your own church experience, right? The things that you want to learn about, the community groups you want to join, you do what you want to do. But at our church, I think because we come from an Asian American background, the white people that had come to our church, they would like leave at 10:30, but notice that our church runs to 12 o'clock, but notice that everyone else stays 10, and then they eat together, and then they go watch movies, right? So it's like, it's a whole day event for all of the Asian people. And so our white and black, Latinos actually mesh really well with Asian American because they have that mentality as well, because we come from an immigrant church where it's like a community center for us versus like just a Sunday slot. It's where we find friends and have shared the same language and culture. And so we bring that into our church, and now the whole church loiters for 30 minutes to an hour, and the whole church goes out to eat. And then we do all kinds of life together, right? Throughout the rest of the week, everyone's inviting people to their homes, to study, to the movies. And we notice that that's like an Asian thing. But that our millennials who aren't Asian is saying, we want that as well. That's something that we value. This doing community and life thing together is really important to us. And I think another part of Asian culture that translates well into millennials is this idea of inclusion. That we kind of have eyes for people who are left out. We know that this guy sitting in the corner is not okay. And so I think, again, if you go to a majority culture church, there's not this need to make sure everyone's engaged in talking to someone, right? You could come to a church for your whole life and sit by yourself, maybe not your whole life, but for weeks on end, you can kind of sit by yourself and go home. At our church, every time I step back and look around, I see every person in the room engaged in conversation after church. That if one person is just kind of standing by themselves, at some point someone else will come and include them, not into just conversation, but into the community. Like, hey, we want you to come to lunch with us. We want you to join us for basketball. We want you to watch Walking Dead at this guy's house at 10 p.m., you know? And then, and so there's just that facet of community. So that's another way in which I feel like the millennials in our generation, they're looking for that community. They're looking for something localized. They're looking for, I think, as we're more effective when we do outreach as a team, and when we see our community as part of how we do outreach. And so, yeah, those are kind of my thoughts. God's really blessed us as we've moved into our preview services. We went from 30 to, each preview was about 200 to 300 people, and then we're about 130 now after our grand opening. And we've been able to, I think what's surprising to me is seeing people who are white, black, and Latino want to be a part of like a Asian mentality church. But our leadership team is half non-Asian, so we're our cultures blend. You know, the Asians are coming to church on time more, you know, and there's a blending of culture, and I think that's really beautiful. But I also know that there's something we have to offer. I think that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, in our Asian experience, even if there's parts of our heritage that are difficult to grapple with, there's other parts that are not just attractive to Asian Americans, but it's attractive to millennials. I think it's attractive for our whole generation as we learn from other cultures as well. So. Well,
thank you, Wilson. You know, one of the things that it's exciting for us is we are living, Wilson, thank you for sharing.
I'm gonna
say it a little bit. Okay, Wilson has to leave in a few minutes. One of the things that's exciting for us is that the world is colliding. I made a comment that if you think about even in terms of music, how now in the Philippines or in Korea or you go to Colombia, wherever you are, music is now the same because you have this thing called the internet. And what you watch, what you hear, what you listen to is all not converging together. And I think one of the greatest advantages that we have for the gospel in terms of planting churches is to approach it from a multi-ethnic perspective. And I think one of the things that sometimes we don't do as much as Asians is sometimes we can copy the American form and say that's the way we have to do church. But in reality, the gospel is not American, right? The gospel is the gospel. It was actually pre-America. But the forms in which we can present the gospel, I think the creativity of our heritage can add color and flavor to the ministry. And so while we could take the best, instead of taking the worst of everything, we take the best of things as well. So one of the things that I want to have DJ now come and share is just to show you the reality, the spectrum of how quickly things are changing. And so we're going to look at some of the trends that are happening across the U.S., especially in terms of the Asian American community.
Thank you, Ray. So in the few minutes we have together, just want to give you a big picture of what's happening. This is the new reality. So I have the privilege to kind of keep an eye on it. Plus, it's my habit to do that. So just keeping an eye on what's coming next and what's developing and how I can be a part of helping the church where it's at to connect with what's happening now and for the future. Quick snapshot, what's happening around the world. Which nation will be the largest Christian nation in 10 years? Probably less than 10 years now. But any guesses? Yes, China. China. It's also the nation, but that helps it. But China will be the largest Christian nation in the world in a globalized village that we all live in, connected by the internet. This is something to be aware of. So this also means the Chinese church in America should be doing something with this knowledge rather than just being nearsighted and looking inside. There's a lot going on outside. One of the things we got to do at Regenerate Network is two years ago, we took our team to Beijing, China. And we got to experience a Chinese church there that was a house church, meaning a government building, running over 1,000 people every weekend. And they had a separate young adult service to be more contextualized and to reach people where they are. And that Chinese church was as contemporary as Saddleback Church. Actually, they used the Saddleback baseball diamond to illustrate how they bring people and train them up as disciples. And you can't get any more Chinese than being a Chinese church in China, right? Mm-hmm. And yet when we go to the ethnic church experience here in the U.S., it's like a time warp back 20 or 30 years that, you know, it's frozen in time. And part of it is understandable because immigrants coming to a U.S., to foreign land, there's a cultural shock, and it affects people's whole being. And to have a safe place where they can just be themselves and be familiar with something is part of their humanity. But the world is changing so fast. Internet, how many of you have a cell phone in your pocket? This did not exist 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I have a son who's 18 years old now, just entered college, so I'm an empty nester. And he's grown up in a world that's always had the internet. Think about, you know, how he sees the world and how he relates. Very different. He's really into Snapchat. So for me to communicate with him, I meet him where he is rather than making him come to me. So we Snapchat back and forth. Another thing that's happening, America is diversifying like very rapidly. This is a map showing the third most spoken language in each state. And here in California, that's Tagalog. Yeah. Did I say it right? Okay. I mispronounced it last time, so sorry. There's some German around, but look at Texas and Oklahoma. Who would have thought Vietnamese is the third most spoken language there? There's actually this huge Vietnamese-American gathering in Oklahoma with like 30,000, 40,000 people, Catholic people, that gather for this huge communal event, expression of faith and culture together, which is fascinating. And then even here in Georgia and Virginia, Korean, third most spoken language there. And there's a couple pockets of Chinese, Hmong in the middle there, in Wisconsin, Minnesota or Wisconsin? Which state is it? Huh? Minnesota or Wisconsin?
Minnesota, but look Minnesota. At even yeah. Michigan, Arabic is the most spoken language. And again, there's a large Arabic. Yeah.
Again, these charts are available at regenerant.org.
So is number two Spanish?
Yes, always.
Yeah, Spanish is everywhere.
Always Spanish.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Spanish. So.
But Chinese Mandarin is most spoken in New York. Yeah.
So for I want to encourage us, those of us that have a bicultural background, it's no longer a lost identity. It's a huge gift that God has given us to navigate this new world. And we want to be in partnership with you to navigate this new world. Asian Americans, as both of us are Asian American, we also see a lot of fast-changing developments in the Asian American world. So Asian Americans are the fastest-growing racial ethnic grouping, surpassing even Hispanics in terms of immigration, as well as population growth, both rate and numerically. And Asian Americans have so much potential as a people because of their value for education. And so in terms of comparing Asians with non-Asians, Asian Americans are the highest income, best educated, and the fast growing racial group in America. And for those of us that have that bicultural background, and those of us that have a multi-ethnic mindset, this is a huge opportunity and a lot of potential that we can activate with the power of the gospel. A little background I'm going to skip because that's where Asian Americans came. This is a chart showing the population growth over the past 70 years. So 1965 was when the Immigration Act opened the doors for more Asian Americans and people outside of America to come to the U.S. And you can see this exponential shape of the curve that has increased the Asian American population so far. And here we are at an exponential conference. And numerically, yes.
Are Asian Americans growing faster than Latino?
Yes.
Okay.
faster by percentage as well as numerically. And I'm gonna, two charts from now, you'll see where it's going. So just hold on a second. Numerically, it comes out to 18 million. This is 2011. Today, it's right around 20 million and continuing to grow. It will be double that by 2050 or sooner. We're at 6% of the US population. That will be about 9 or 10% in our lifetime by 2050. Top six Asian American groups, Chinese, Filipino, Indian, Vietnamese, Korean, and Japanese. These top six groups, that makes up 83% of the Asian American population. Asian Americans are very diverse. And while this accounts for the 83% of the whole pie, there's also 17% of minority Asian Americans, which is illustrated here. So do we have any here? Not here, but just to be aware that all Asians are not alike, very different actually, ethnically, culturally, and linguistically. And we want to be sensitive to that, but also it gives us, we do have the shared life experience of being a minority in a new land, and that's where we do have common ground to have the gospel be shared. Asian Americans are everywhere in the country. The conversation of Asian American churches in the past has been a West Coast kind of conversation and would percolate across the country over the course of a decade. Well, partly because of the internet. People are everywhere in the US, and as our previous chart shown, there's Vietnamese and Chinese and other Asian Americans all over the states of America. So wherever God would open opportunities for you, there are multi-ethnic opportunities to do ministry everywhere. A couple more numbers, and then we want to open the floor for us to interact. Numerically, over 7,000 churches, mostly ethnic Asian churches. 4,000 are Korean, 1,200 are Chinese, 800 are Asian Indian, about 300 Vietnamese, just to show you a few highlights. Again, these slides are available for you to drill down if you want to focus on a particular one, because that's usually strategic. Numerically, in terms of number churched and unchurched, and this is including Protestant and Catholic, you'll notice the differences in percentages for each ethnic group. There are some that are very Christian, like Filipino and Korean, and a large number that are very few Christians within the Asian groups. And one thing Ray noted probably is the Asian Americans are much more receptive to the gospel than their native country, native nation, the motherland. So when immigrants come, we have this huge opportunity to really present the gospel.
They're more receptive when they're
here.
Out of their country.
Yes, yes. And these are some numbers that show that. Okay, here we go. So here's where the population growth is projected to be. So right now, we're right at about 20 million. And in a lifetime, or sooner, 2050, over 40 million. Now, from our life experience, how well are Asian churches doing in response to this? We could do a lot more, right? So with this in mind, it should inform how we do ministry, how we do outreach, and preparing the next generation. Now, one of the things that I'm particularly focused on in this Asian American pie is the next generation multi-Asian churches. And I define that by English-speaking churches that are autonomous and reaching at least 50% Asian American in their church. Now, what's unique about these churches, most of them do not self-identify as Asian American churches. They're just church because they want to have an open door for all people. And Wilson, that was the first time I've heard Wilson's story. He gave such an articulate explanation for the value that we bring as Asian Americans to the community of the millennials and the church in America. And I'm glad it's recorded, because I'm going to transcribe that and share that story of really the gift that we do have to bring, because it's hard to articulate. Right, and I think Wilson did a masterful job explaining that. And we want to be a servant, and we want to offer ourselves to the full body of Christ and to the community. Today, actually, the number is up to 300. So again, the shape of the curve is exponential, and we see this as a huge opportunity for churches to be effective at reaching the next generation.
Now, but if you think about this, which is kind of staggering, there's only about 300 churches reaching about how many million?
Yeah. 20 million.
Yeah, 20 million people. So that if you look at how many, if again, Asians are the most unchurched population in all of the U.S., more so than African Americans, Hispanics, as well as Anglo. So again, there's the opportunity.
We've got our work cut out, but it's exciting to see this starting to happen. And in case study, was this what Wilson was going to do?
Yeah, but you could also share your case studies as well.
So let me share a couple examples of churches that are what these multi-Asian churches look like. Okay, so
should I load it up for you?
No. I can just tell a story. So there's a church in the Northern Cal area in the Oakland area called Bay Area Chinese Bible Church. Founded in the 1950s, started as an English ministry with Vacation Bible School for the kids in the neighborhood. And God bless that ministry. They opened a Chinese-run Christian school to serve both Chinese and non-Chinese. And over the past 50 years, it's made adjustments to the neighborhood composition to be an open door to all people, which is somewhat unusual for the ethnic Asian church, but they've done that very well with some strong leadership and a vision for the neighborhood rather than just their own people. They have Mandarin worship services, Cantonese worship services, English worship service, and it's a multi-venue, multi-site kind of a church. And there's a mutual respect between the different cultures and languages, which takes a lot of work, but they've worked it. And they've recently moved into a new building, and they're beginning to diversify beyond Chinese faster than ever. So that's one of the positive stories that we can learn from and grow from. So the pastor there, Steve Quinn, I keep running into him at church conferences. And I noticed that because I don't see too many older Asian Americans at conferences, but they're willing to really invest and keep learning and bring his team along and learn together to really serve for the gospel. Another example I'll share of how do older churches transition and stay relevant and effective in ministry. There's a young guy, he's 40, 41 now, a guy named Eugene Cho, who's a Korean-American, gifted speaker. I heard he had background as a theater major, so he's very animated as a speaker. He had some background in English ministry in a traditional Korean church, but over time he felt a call to multi-ethnic ministry. Started a coffee house that became the venue for worship services on Sundays, and had rented that from a older Swedish Norwegian church from the Evangelical Covenant denomination that was founded in the 1930s. And that church followed the normal life cycle of a church. Usually churches start with reaching young adults, then young adults have kids, the kids grow up and graduate and leave the house. Leave the church and the house, and then people pass on into eternity. Well, the church grew and then declined. They had about 70 people. And rather than just closing the door or selling the building to developers, that pastor of the smaller congregation, an Anglo guy, built a relationship with this young guy who was gifted as a communicator and had a heart for the community and the next generation. And the story culminated in the past 10 years. I think they just had the 10th anniversary. So 10 years ago, they merged. The older church gifted the building to this younger church that was reaching the next generation. Incredibly humble, incredibly generous, and it was a win for the kingdom. Plus, the older, wiser pastor was willing to submit himself as an associate pastor to Eugene Cho. So very radical, countercultural kind of things, but I think it really embodies the kingdom value of what can happen when we are open to what God's doing. So a couple of great stories of what things are happening in our generation.
So one of the things that, and DJ, maybe you and I, as we stand here,
sure.
is As Asian Americans, we have, again, an incredible new opportunity. And not just reaching other Asian Americans. The ethnic church had to do that because of language or because of a particular culture. But because we're now next generation, the question is how are we going to expand? Now, in case in Hawaii, it's not just a youth ministry or just a young adult ministry. It really is the whole state of Hawaii. And I think number one thing I would encourage all of us to do is have an expanded vision of ministry. One of the trends that's happening is among even some mega churches, there's one church in Baltimore where the new senior pastor is a young Korean-American guy of a large Anglo church. There's a church here in Diamond Bar, one of our EV Free churches. He's a guy that I discipled when he was in high school. He's a Korean-American. Now he's a senior pastor of a predominantly white Anglo church, a good-sized church. Again, two of our top young church planters, a guy named Mark Lee, he's at Exponential, and Ryan Kwan, both Korean-Americans, pastoring large, predominantly non-Asian churches. So again, one of the exciting things is this whole new generation of guys like Paul and others who are now rising up and really seeing it, our mission is not now bigger than just Korean-Americans and Chinese-Americans or Asian-Americans. But you know, how can God allow us? And again, we bring a unique perspective. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that this seminar is really encouraging you to do, is bring your East with you. Mm-hmm. Don't put that aside, because I think, especially in this new generation, there is a greater attraction to the gospel when they don't see it from just an Americanized view. So we asked a question in our previous seminar. When you think of Christianity in America, what are the things that people think of? And people were saying things like politics. You know, oftentimes the American view of Christianity is very negative because so much of the culture is embedded in the gospel. And so while our desire is to, instead of taking the worst of both, is to say, how can we bring our culture into it? For example, as a Korean American, Paul, one of the things that I appreciate about our culture growing up in the Korean church was their commitment to sacrifice and a commitment to prayer, early morning prayer and all that. And even though our second generation, that's not a value, at least coming from that, you know, it gives us a new perspective. And for me, as a going to a white Anglo church, so here's my experience. Going to a Korean church, I served at a Korean church, had two conversations with the senior pastor in 3 years. So that's the negative side of being a part of an Asian church. It's a very strict hierarchy. So I went to an American church where everything was much more horizontal. The pastor that I served with was a gentleman named Chuck Swindoll. Many of you. He was my senior pastor. I got ordained at that church. I was one of the early second generation Asian Americans to intern at a large white evangelical church. And I appreciate it so much. So there I learned the mentoring side. But also there are some things in that church where it wasn't as healthy as well. And so again, my job as an Asian American is say, okay, what can I do in terms of understanding the gospel, which is transcultural, and to bring my culture as Asian Americans into it so that we could be effective in reaching Asians as well as non-Asians. And again, you know, in Hawaii, wherever we're from, I think we have a great opportunity for the gospel. So anyway, we wanted to use this to kind of open up the floor for you to ask maybe specific questions for your context. So what are some things that you have questions on, and we can kind of think through that together?
Church.
Okay.
You know?
That's a great question. We talk about church growth. I was just sharing with somebody, for about 10 years. Steve Merrill shared this in the Philippines when he planted Victory Christian. For the longest time, he just, you know, kind of was developing a ministry, and then after a while, the church took off. You know, we've been doing that in our church for about 10 years, about 200 people. In the last 3 months, we almost doubled. We went from 250 to 500 in 3 months. Now, what happened? One, it's God's sovereignty, of course. But number two, there are things that we did in those 10 years that were important. And I think sometimes we neglect the foundation laying. And one of the important things is you have to really have a clear vision. See, results, it's like when you plant a tree. It takes time for the tree to take root. It takes time. And more work is done underground than it is above ground. Mm-hmm. And so often, I think for a lot of pastors, they want things to be done very quickly. So, you know, it's like in our other seminar, this Hispanic guy said, you know, a lot of churches hire Hispanic pastors thinking that they're going to reach all the Hispanics. Well, that's not, doesn't happen. So, for example, if I was a Korean, I'd say, oh, I'm going to hire Paul, so we're going to reach all the Koreans. Well, no. It's not going to happen that way. So number one thing is you need to have a clear vision. of what your ministry is about. And number two, you need to develop the right team. And I think the team concept and leadership is critical in growth. And number three, you have to have an outward focus. And if you're not gonna, if you're all about help pleasing the people inside the church, you're never gonna reach the community. So I would say enlarge your vision, develop a team, you know, recruit a good team, leadership team, and then really have an outward focus. Those are the three things that I think are primary in developing a outward focused church and a growing church. And it's not gonna happen overnight, and you gotta, you know, be patient in that process. But those three things, you need to have the right component. It's like if you're gonna make a meal, if you have the wrong ingredients, no matter what you're gonna make, you better have the right ingredients to make that. Okay, great. Great question. Anything else? We're running short on time. So let me do this. We're gonna close our time in prayer. But I would like for you, if you have any questions individually, call us. DJ and I are available and accessible. I pastor a church. I also work in our denomination. I work in the Evangelical Free Church. But through Regenerative Ambassador, we come to churches to do consulting as well as supporting young leaders. Yes.
So, we're going to be applying for them coaches.
Yeah.
So it would be someone like you, right?
I would love to help you coach. And then, yeah.
You would love to go to Hawaii.
Yeah. If you send me to Hawaii, I would go. Oh, yeah.
I'd love to go to Hawaii.
Yeah. So, yeah, and you know what? There's so many great things happening. Part of it is information. You know, the bigger our vision, then again, to partner with coaches like myself and DJ and others, because we, it's not rocket science, but there are things that needs to be done for a church to become healthy and to grow. So I could talk to you more. So please contact us. Here's our information, our phone number, address, and everything's on
cards
there.
Cards in the back.
Yeah, and cards are in the back. I think Amy gave.
Anyway, we can. Copies of your
They're on the website,
regenerate.org. And just go to the website,